Saying this week is Parshas Vayigash. Vayigash Elav Yehuda Vayeme Biadoini. Yehuda approaches Yosef. Yosef has just made an alila. He's conspired to entrap Binyamin by accusing him of stealing a becher. But of course, Binyamin never stole the becher. It was on Yosef's instructions that people conspired to plant the evidence. So it's obvious to everybody concerned that there's an alilo, but nobody actually refers to the frame-up. Right? So how come that's not mentioned? When Yehuda approaches Yosef, he doesn't say to him, "Oh, and by the way, there's a good chance, Your Honor, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know, that this was just some anti-Semite conspiring to make us look bad." He doesn't. He says, "I and my brothers, we will be slaves. Let the boy go." So the Medrash says that they said, "Yishmokim lebaldin likvoyes choyvoy." They understood that, you know, once justice is taking its course, then there's not, you know, you can't complain, you know, like, it's like Chalila, if the IRS starts to do an audit and this and that, and then they freeze your bank account, and it's like, "Oh yeah, I can't do business, so you're freezing my bank," well, you know, it's too bad, you know. Once the wheels of justice start to grind, then you can't really complain when you get caught up in it and things get really tight. And so Yehuda understands that because he was Goynev Das Oviv, he stole his father's mind, Gnevus Das, by saying, "Hakeno Aksonis Bincha," look, recognize, is this your son's coat? When they dipped the coat in blood and they brought it to their father. So he understood that, you know, this was a Midah Keneged Midah, that the way things were unfolding, it seemed, you know, that they were being shown. "Oh, you could steal, I could steal. You can conspire to trick people, I can conspire. You know, however smart you are, you can't be smarter than God," right? So they understood that what was being played out here was a cosmic drama rather than just some petty little offense, or, you know, somebody trying to hurt them, or something. They understood that they're getting, this is payback. Payback hurts, and so he didn't argue about the rights and wrongs of the case, because it wasn't really about this case. It was about the big case. You know? The Ishbitzer, you know, we learn this every year with a kind of anticipation of that moment where Yosef just can't hold back anymore. That Yehuda pushes him over the edge, and, you know, we mentioned the Torah of Reb Leib Eger, you know, that in the physical body there's also a moment beyond which you can't hold back anymore. And then something orgasmic takes over, and the body just goes automatically into orgasm, and it can't hold back anymore. There's no holding back. It's no longer something a person can hold under their own volition, and so that's the shefa that comes into the world of the new soul and so forth is associated with that going beyond the edge. And so Yosef, who is Midas Yesod, he has within him all these hashpos of toivos, and in order for him to go over the edge, because he keeps holding back, Yehuda, who is Malchus and represents the Shekhinah, the feminine, he has to push Yehuda over the edge, and that's the phrase, "Bi Adoni," in me. And over the years that we've been learning Ishbitzu Torah, we've come back to this many, many times. This week, I was thinking that we could go to the Sichsuch. We could go to the foreplay, which is the Vayigashel of Yehuda Vayeme Biyadoni. What is really going on? In Ishbitz, they talk about the connection here between Moshiach, that really the argument that's going on between Yehuda and Yosef is in the Oir of Moshiach. Because Yehuda is operating in the dark. Everybody's in the dark. Nobody knows what's going on except Yosef, right? And as we said, Yosef, the meaning of Midas Yisod is that light that illuminates everything, that explains everything, that gives context. And Meishloach talks about Hoid v'Hodor. What's the difference between Hoid v'Hodor? Generally, we say Hoid v'Hodor l'chai olomim, beauty, and what's Hodor? Hodor is also beauty, right? Hidur mitzvah, beautifying a mitzvah. So what's the difference between Hoid and Hodor? Meishloach says the difference between Hoid and Hodor is Hoid is the beginner of Yehuda, and Hodor is the beginner of Yosef. And Yehuda is the beginner of Tiferes Lo'imin Ho'odom, and Yosef is the beginner of Tiferes Lo'iseho. So when Yosef does something, it's clear to everybody who looks that it's a holy act. So Hodor, the kind of beauty that is Hodor, is obvious. But when a person lives their life with Hidur, it means anybody looking at that person can see the beauty of their actions, the beauty of their life. It's a life full of Yerushamayim. You know, if there's one mitzvah that you're allowed to do, that you're supposed to do, befarhesya. You know, generally we say, Hatznei lechesim Hashem lekecho, walk modestly with God, walk privately with tzniyas. Don't let people see when you're doing a mitzvah. You don't have to broadcast it. In fact, it's the best thing is keep it quiet. But there's one mitzvah that's you have to do befarhesya, and that is yiras shamayim, right? Fear of heaven is something that everybody has to know. Everybody has to see. Because that's really the meaning of yiras shamayim, is to do things in a way that are not questionable. If I walk down the street and there's something, whether it's a billboard or a person or something going on that I shouldn't be looking at, I turn my eyes away. I don't have to not let anybody see that I turn my eyes away. It's all right. It's rare enough. It's all right. It's all right if that Yerushamayim has its own explanation. But Hoid is different. Hoid, there's no Tiferes Loiseh. There's no glory to the person who's doing the act. Because Hoid is a beautiful act that doesn't necessarily look like a good thing. It's Tiferes Lo'imin Ho'odom, meaning that the glory in the act is coming from the human and the deepest level of what it means to be human. And it does. There's no Tiferes Lo'iseh, there's no glory for the person doing it, because people looking, if somebody is standing in front of a king and they mamish, their eyes are on the king and they can't move because they're having a moment of bittul, and they just feel like they're nothing in front of this glory, this majesty, somebody looking from behind that person, what do they see? They see somebody standing still. There's nothing to look at. It's like, hey, man, you're in the presence of the king. You should be happy. You should be something. Why are you just standing there like a dead log? like a statue. Like, where's your chayas? Where's your involvement? Because you're looking from behind, right? If you could stand in between the person and the king and look into the person's face and you see their rapture on their face, then you wouldn't be speaking like that, right? So hoyd is that bechina of where everybody looking at the person sees sometimes even the opposite. Yehuda is hoyd, Yosef is hoda. The thing is, Deshvitzer says that what's going on here, the struggle over who owns Binyamin in a sense, it's not just simple. That really the struggle of who owns Binyamin is really going on until Mashiach is coming. So Bisyakiv is explained like this. When Yaakov was ready, he said, "Go down to Egypt, Shivrulonu Ma'at Oichel." Go down to Egypt. Why would Yaakov send his children to Egypt? I mean, it's better to die than to go down to Egypt. Well, was this Meshik the Kingdom Mitzrayim? I mean, it's like, which Jewish father would say to his children, you know, Kindelach, I want you to go into this strip joint on Times Square and get me get me something to drink. It's like, hello, why are you sending your children to Mitzrayim? Why don't you emigrate? Go to Babylon, you're hungry. See, Yaakov understands that there's something in Mitzrayim that they need. There's something that belongs to us in Mitzrayim. So he sends Yehuda. It's interesting, last week in Parshas Miketz, when Yosef told him, "Don't come down here without your younger brother." So Reuven says to his father, "Here, let's go down. Please, send Binyamin down." Yaakov refuses. Then Yehuda says, "Anoichi arvenim yodet vakshene, I guarantee the boy. You can demand him from my hand." Yaakov agrees. Why? Because Yaakov, when he looks at Yehuda, he can see who Yehuda is. Yehuda govar be'echev. Yehuda is stronger. He's got a kind of gavura that he doesn't have to be afraid of going into Mitzrayim. He doesn't have to be afraid of going into the most worst place in the world. That's Yehuda's strength. So he sends Yehuda. The thing is, Yaakov has really, he doesn't know how strong and how powerful Yehuda is. He says, "Shivru lonu ma'at oichel." You know, bring me back, Epis. Bring me something back. But he doesn't expect Yehuda to do what Yehuda is doing. And until Mashiach's coming, Yehuda is on this mission that he's been sent by Yaakov to go down into Egypt and bring something back. The thing is, there are two tzaddikim. The highest tzaddik in the world is Yosef. He's the tzaddik ilo. He is the tzaddik who can hold back everybody from doing the wrong thing. Yosef has the ability to shine light, that when we look at what we're doing, we can mamash, it becomes so clear to us what we're doing, that we can be at the beginning of Sumero. Yosef, if you're in the presence of Yosef, there's no Aveira that you want to do. Yosef has this ability to shine light into yourself. If I could shine light into myself like Yosef shines into me, then all my desire to worship God would be clear to me and open to me. What is my problem, right? Or what is anybody's problem? We have no idea who we are. Without the Bechin of Yosef opening up what our desires really are, we can't really know who we are. And we walk around in the darkness. And that's why the whole story of Yosef and Mitzrayim is this story of Chanukah. You know, they're connected. When Yosef is in Gulas, then we're all in Gulas. And really, that's what's going on in the world. So much, we spend so much energy thinking of what we need and what we want, and how much I can't hold myself back from going for what I want, and how caught up I am in my Yetzer. But really, my Yetzer Tov is just as strong as my Yetzer Hara. How come I can't experience it? Because that part of me, which is Yosef HaTzadik, is in Gulas. And it has to be that way, because otherwise I wouldn't go down to Mitzrayim. I would avoid Mitzrayim like the plague. Yosef is the Tzadik Yilo'o. Binyamin is the Tzadik Tato'o. He's the low Tzadik. Yosef has, Binyamin has an amazing talent. Ze'ev Yitroif. He has the ability to run out of his den, snatch something up, grab it, and drag it back to his den. The Gemara says the Beis HaMikdash was built in the Chelik of Binyamin. Even though Yerushalayim, so Yehuda's power is that he has inside himself tekifus. He has inside himself this boldness that he can go beyond what his father commanded him, and he can grab a big piece. But in order to do that, he relies on Binyamin. Binyamin is the Ze'ev Yitreif. But Binyamin has this koyach that none of the other Shvotim has, that he can jump out of his den and grab something and drag it back to his den and eat it. And the koyach that we have in exile to go among the nations and to grab from them what really is beautiful, and to bring it and to integrate it, as we said, we learned over the years that, you know, God's genius is that nothing is ever repeated. Every human, not just every human, but everything in the universe is unique. Which means that it expresses God in another way. And every nation has its unique quality. And that every nation expresses itself in certain ways that's different from other nations. But that really, the genius goes really deep. It's really an expression of the divine. And that so long as it's there among the nations, it gets used in a really, usually a really disgusting way. And they take this divine gift and they express it in some ich weiß was. Who wants to know? Just look at the world. And that the reason the exile is taking so long is because we, our job as the Eden is to go there, chap, to assimilate. Our job is to assimilate among the goyim and to assimilate the genius of that nation, of that goyim, and then to express it in a holy way. And then that genius, that midah, that gift, then is no longer in exile. This, the medium to go chap things is the tribe of Binyamin. That is Binyamin's function. And he is the tzaddik tato'o. He is the low tzaddik, where Yosef is the high tzaddik. And when Yaakov thought that he had lost Yosef, he consoled himself with Binyamin, thinking that the world can operate, the sephirois can operate. If Yosef is missing, then Binyamin can be that midas yisod. He can be that conduit through which things flow. But Yaakov doesn't see the whole picture because nobody can see the picture. My thoughts are not your thoughts, says God. But really, throughout the 6,000 years, if we want to look at a big picture, this is the big picture. Yaakov is the mind. Yaakov is the great mind that can see and understands what needs to be done. And he also, Yaakov understands that in order for things to be done, you have to take risks. Yaakov himself, he puts himself into that darkness of his father's blindness and becomes part of a conspiracy to trick his father so that he can get that brocha which might have gone to Esav and that comes to the Jewish people. Yaakov knows that the process of the journey of the divine, it's not all about goodness. It's not about all light and love. I was just thinking today, you know, it's so nice to think of God is love. But you know, it's not true. Saying God is love is just another midah. It's just another characteristic. Then, you know, we end up worshipping love, and that's the whole Christian story. Why are we not Christians? Because God isn't love. What is God? How can you think to know what is God? It's very nice to think that God is love, but it's just another avodah zarah. As soon as you think that, as soon as you make that, impose that shape on God, then you enter in, you're going down that road of paganism. Paganism and Judaism are different because we don't try and put an image of some kind of a midah of an emotion or a characteristic onto God. Yaakov is the one who frees himself from all kinds in a way that goes beyond Avraham. For Avraham, we said, you know, God is Mayim, God is Chesed. For Yaakov, even that's too close to the edge. Yitzchak, God is fire, God is Gevura. For Yaakov, even that, for Yaakov, he can synthesize fire inside water. What does that mean? He can go beyond the opposites. How can you synthesize fire and water? You can see them both as just illusions and metaphors, and you can say, you know what, there's something bigger than fire and water, there's something smaller than fire and water, there's something that's deeper, more powerful, softer. You can just keep on piling the metaphors on higher and higher, and what do you have? You have Tiferes. Yaakovina knows there are jobs. God created the world because it's a process. You know what the process is? The process, we say to Yehuda, Ato, Yoiducha Achich. Yehuda is Ato. Yehuda says to God, you. To say to God, you, to reach all that distance where you can go from being, you know, an amoeba, and you can evolve. You can evolve from being a fish and a fowl and a this and a mammal, and you can evolve until a point where you can stand in front of God and say, Ato, you, God, Baruch Ato. You know, that process, there's a lot of darkness, and there's a lot of Hester, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors. There's a lot of stuff which isn't so simple. Yaakov understands that. And he gives Yehuda, he tells him, go down to Egypt, Shivrilon Mat Oichel, and Yehuda runs, because, you know, Yehuda has tekifas, and he knows, doesn't matter what Dad says, in my heart, I know. He knows you don't have to look good. Yehuda, in your heart, do you have to look good when you love someone? Do you care how you look to the world? See, on the outside, when somebody is at the level of Hod, and they don't care about Hodor, they can look like the Goy. He's doing the same thing. So Yosef says, oh, wait a minute, wait a minute. You look, what are you doing? You look like a goy when you do this. Yehuda doesn't care. Because he's not looking at the Hodor. He's not looking at that kind of beauty. Because Yehuda represents the lave of Klal Yisrael, the deepest heart. So Binyamin receives his instructions from Yehuda. Yehuda says to him, okay, Binyamin, we're going into this place, and you've got to chap it, and you've got to hang on, you've got to hold on to your holiness, but this is a really holy spark. The Gemara says that the Beis HaMikdash was built in the Chelik of Binyamin. Part of Yerushalayim, that mountain, is in the Chelik of Binyamin. And the Ritzuah, there was a little strip of ground that went out from the Chelik of Yehuda, and the Beis HaMikdash was built in Binyamin, but the Mizbeach was built on the tribe, on the property of the tribe of Yehuda. So Binyamin wanted to swallow it. And so there's a little kevish, there's a foundation at the bottom of the Mizbeach, which is in the chelik of the tribe of Binyamin. So there's this struggle, because Binyamin has the ability to swallow everything in the world that is holy, and he wants to do that. So these four are really the tension that operates in the Jewish people from the beginning of time until Mashiach is coming. Yaakov, who's the mind, who knows, who sees the big picture, who sends Yehuda, he sends him before him to go and scout out. And Yehuda sends Binyamin as like his arm. You know, and the stone in the choshen, the Ishbitzer says, the stone in the breastplate, that the high priest used to wear, his stone was called Yoshfe, Yudshin Pehe, which is Yesh Peh, has a mouth. It's like Binyamin's whole ability is this, you know, he can swallow things. He can chap things with his mouth and swallow them. So Yosef is the beginner of Hodor. Yosef can shine light on things. Yosef holds back the Jewish people from getting lost in Gullus. He's furious with Yehuda and says, "What are you doing with my brother Binyamin? How dare you send him down there into exile to become dirty and desecrated and defiled in the tomb of the Goyim?" And Yehuda says, "No, we have this symbiotic relationship." And Yosef says, no. "I'm the Tzadik Yilo, Binyamin's the Tzadik Tito. We two belong together. There's a struggle, a cosmic struggle about to whom does Binyamin do service? In whose service is Binyamin? Is Binyamin in the service of holding back, or is Binyamin in the service of grabbing from the Goyim the sparks of holiness that need to be pulled back from the exile?" And Yosef just can't understand. He can't see himself. He can see everybody, but he can't see himself. And you know, even though God tries to show Yosef numerous times who he is, it's hard for Yosef to get it. And in the dreams of the Sarah Mashkim, the Sarah Oifim, the dreams of the baker and the butler were really there to try and explain to Yosef who he is and who his brother Yehuda is. You know, there are two servants of the king, the baker and the butler. And the baker, the Medrash says, a little stone was found in a piece of bread. So the king says, "Off to prison." In the butler, he put a cup of wine in front of Pharaoh, and there was a fly in it. Pharaoh says, "Off to prison." These two people are there in prison with Yosef, and they have the dreams, and so the baker gets his head chopped off, and the butler gets his job back. What's the message to Yehuda, to Yosef? Yosef is the baker. Yosef hu ha-mashbir. He's the one who feeds the whole world. Yehuda, he's the butler, right? He's the batchen. He's the court jester. He's the one who makes the whole world smile. And you know, there's a satisfaction that comes with bread, but there's a joy that comes with wine. And they're different functions. You can't live just by wine. On the other hand, you can't live just by bread. The baker, has to know if there's a stone in the bread, it means there's a chsuran in his avoida. There's a problem with him. Why is there a stone in the bread? You didn't do your job. You're supposed to sift the flour until there are no stones in it. If there's a stone in it, when Pharaoh bites in it, it's your fault. You didn't do your job. If there's a fly in the wine, how is a person supposed to protect wine from a fly? The fly flies in by itself. I can have a net on top of the wine until the last moment, and then I pour it, and as I'm putting it in front of Pharaoh, the fly comes in on its own. Wieso kann sich ein Mensch abhüten? How can a person protect themselves? Yosef is supposed to understand from these stories that there's a difference between him and Yehuda. That the reason he is who he is because he's the baker who's feeding the whole world with bread, and Yehuda's got a different paradigm. But it's very hard for Yosef to see, because, again, to see the big picture, God says, my thoughts are not your thoughts. So they're struggling. They're struggling over Binyamin. Who's going to be in charge of the way the Jewish people are going to live in exile? And what the function of the Jewish people in exile is. And this is a struggle that was decided in this parasha when Yehuda comes and says to Yosef, Bi Adoni. On the face of it, you know, Yehuda hasn't really done anything new. He's not said anything new. He just tells his story, you know. We came down to Egypt, we're 12 brothers, one brother was lost, and, you know, because he was a favorite of his father, so the other brother was kept at home. And then we came down and so forth, and now if I return to my father and I don't bring this child with me, nafshi kshura b'nafshi, on the face of it, Yehuda hasn't really done anything special. And yet, the Medrash says that there were three things that Yehuda did that made all his brothers agree that he was the king. The first one was when he said, Ma betza, what can we gain from killing our brother? Let's sell him. The other one was, he said, Ma nitzadok, how can we explain ourselves? You know what? Let's offer ourselves as slaves and let Binyamin go. And the third one was when he said, Bi Adoni. And his brothers agreed that he's the leader. He's forever. Kings are going to come from the tribe of Yehuda. The Jewish people are going to be led by this tribe. So if it was so marvelous, like how come we can't see what's going on? The Ishbitzer says the true greatness of Yehuda is the Baal Tshuva. Yehuda is the Baal Tshuva, and that's why David HaMelech, who's descended from Yehuda, is the one who brings really Teshuva down and shows us all how to become Baal Tshuva. What does it mean to be a Baal Tshuva? It means that God says, I wanted you to do this Aveira. It wasn't an Aveira. It was a mitzvah. I mean, Yehuda did something wrong. In last week's Sedra, he said to his father, I guarantee you, Ani Orev, I'm a guarantor. Miyodi Tevakshena, you can demand Binyamin back from me, because I guarantee you I will bring him back. And Yehuda, even while he's saying it, he knows it's such a stupid thing to say. How can you guarantee? You're one man against the world. Do you even know if you're going to wake up in the morning? I mean, what is this? You're guaranteeing your father that you're going to... And he... Even while he's saying it, he knows it's a mistake. I mean, he knows it's an Aveira. Because he says, if I don't bring him back, v'chotosi l'chokol ha'yomim, I've sinned. If I don't bring him back to my father, I've sinned all my life. In this life, in the next life. He knows what he's doing is a sin. And he does it anyway. Because Yehuda, that's who Yehuda is. He's got this amazing tekifa, he's got this amazing boldness. And to the eyes of everybody, it's like, whoa, what has he done? He's meshuggah. The nicest thing you could say about it is that it's meshuggah. But really, it's sinful to make guarantees, to promise, to make people promises that you can't fulfill, that you don't have the power to make come true. You're like, what are you doing? But Yehuda, somewhere inside him, in his heart, he knows this is the thing to do. And when a person does teshuvah, God says, I wanted you to do this thing, even though it was an Avera. And this is why Hoid, the real beauty, we said, the difference between Hoid and Hod is that, because Hoid It's hidden. The person looking at your deed may even think it's an ugly deed, may even think that it's an avera, and there's no difference between what you're doing and what a goy would do. That's hoid. That was the mass of Yehuda. You know something? The Gemara says, we learn in the Torah, what's the difference between an oila and a chatas? An oila is a burnt offering. A burnt offering, the whole thing goes up to heaven, but you know, the blood that is sprinkled below the middle line of the altar. A chatas doesn't all go up to heaven. The flesh gets eaten, and some of it gets burned on the altar, and some of it just gets taken out. But the blood is sprinkled above the line. Because mokem shebal tshuva oimdim ein tzadikim gemurim yecholim lamid, where the bal tshuva stands, the pure tzaddik can't stand. Because the sin became a mitzvah. How does that happen? So one of the reasons that Ishbitz is considered avant-garde is because there are things in Ishbitz that really are hard for to hear in the classical sense of, you know, the accountancy picture. In accountancy, there's, when something is written in red, it's a debit. Something is written in black, it's a credit. You can only make the red go away by pouring lots of black into the books. Red is debit. There's no power on earth that can make the red black. The red is red. And we have gotten used to an idea, a picture of the world where an aver is an avera, a sin is a sin, a bad thing is a bad thing. You can't make a bad thing good. You did a bad thing, ho, do tshuva, say you're sorry, promise you won't do it again, and, you know, it'll go away because God is merciful. That's not real. That's not Judaism. In Judaism, you do teshuvah, me'ahava, zedoinois nasa kezuchios, which means if a person does teshuvah because they have love for God, which means that you realize that God is inside you, and that you realize that you are never cut off from God. That's what love means. What's the difference between my mother and some other woman? My mother will never lose her love for me. And if I confuse them, it means I don't really understand what love is. If I understand what love is, my love for her and her love for me, then I understand that there's something unbreakable. Until a person understands there's something unbreakable with him and God, then it's not love. Yehuda is really the heart of the Jewish people. He's the one who understands and can access that interior feeling of love for God. And Yehuda, last week at the end of the Sedra, he's mamash miyayish. He says to Yosef, you know what? All of us, we give ourselves as slaves and so on. And then this week in the Seder, something has happened because Yehuda has realized that it's not true what he was thinking last week. Something inside him says, you're making a mistake, Yehuda. Don't be miyayish. This can't be. This picture that you had of the world in which you've ruined everything, it's, this can't be. But if I didn't make a mistake, Yehuda says, then if I'm not everything that I haven't done, my whole life isn't a mistake, it means that, what does it mean at the deepest level? I mean, I'm still connected to God. I've never done a sin. I didn't sell my brother. Then everything is an illusion and everything. What's going on? I'm standing in front of this man and he's like, he's terrorizing me, my family, my father, he's going to kill me. He's like, I don't know what, Ribbono shel Olam, Master of the Universe, you have to show me. You have to, but Yehuda doesn't have any light, because without Yosef there's no light, so he's in the dark. He's in the deepest darkness. But Yehuda, somewhere in inside himself, he finds the strength to believe that it can't be, that he knows my mistake was mistaken. That which I thought that I had done something wrong and I'd brought all this down on myself, that's a mistake. You know why I can't walk on water? It's because I think I can't walk on water. It's not a special gift to be able to walk on water. It's a mishigas that we can't all walk on water. There's something I've been thinking wrong, he says. I've been listening to my head. I need to listen to my heart. He says, Ribbono shel Olam, you're in my heart. You're the only thing that's in my heart. God says, oh, you're right. You're right. I'm the only thing that's in your heart. You never did an aver. You didn't hate your brother. At that moment, says, Yehuda gives a shout. Paro and Yosef both fall off their thrones. That koyach that a person, a yid, has to jump up and say, I didn't lose anything. I am still connected to God at the deepest level that Yosef cannot see. Deeper even. In that place that even Yosef can't see. In that place where God is alone, v'niskav Hashem levadai, in that place where God is alone. You know, and inside every yid there is such a place, and that's the meaning of Mashiach. And the only way you can see Mashiach, we were talking last week, is that light, oiroi shel Mashiach. In order to make light, you have to bang two stones together. That's what Adam HaRishon gets shown in God's mercy on Motzei Shabbos, when he's kicked out of Gan Eden, because the original light, you could see that from one end of the world to the other, and then Adam and Chava are thrown out into this world of darkness, and God says, you know what? Let me show you how to make light. You know how you make light? You bang two stones together. What are the two stones? Misham Roya Evan Yisrael, Yosef is one stone. Evan Moasu Aboinim Hois L'Rosh Pino. Yehuda is the other stone. From this clash of Yehuda and Yosef comes the light. And in your own self, if you can rub these two together, from the sichsach, from the struggle, from the banging together of the Yetzirah and the heart, and the Torah, which is inside a person's heart, from the banging together comes the light of Mashiach. And you know, it's popular among modern Jews to say, oh, there's no such thing as a Mashiach, it's the Messianic times, and we did okay. And then we have traditional belief that Mashiach actually means what it says. Mashiach ben David, it's a person, it's a man who comes from the tribe. The emesis, they're both true. Because Mashiach is not going to appear until the Mashiach in every Yid appears. And the Mashiach in every Yid appears because we smash these two stones together of Yehuda and Yosef. And we smash the stones together of the Yetzirah and the Torah. And out of it comes the light of Mashiach.